Welcome to Spreading the Good Stuff, a podcast for regional women who want to thrive in their work, wellness, family and community. We share stories of triumph, challenge, growth and change in business and in life, and offer helpful insights and advice to empower you to live your best life, however that looks for you.
Hello, and welcome back to Spreading the Good Stuff for episode 9 of season 2. I'm Katrina Myers.
I'm Leonie Cannon.
And I'm Christy O'Brien. Hello, ladies.
Hello, everybody. It's so nice to be back in your ears again. We're kind of excited today and fired up for this conversation. As always, we have so much to chat about. So a couple of things that have been on our minds lately that we've been inspired to talk about are one is the sandwich generation, which Chris is going to explain to us all about. And I'm sure that many of our listeners can relate to this phase. I feel like I'm heading into it. And for some of us, we're there already. And it's a challenging time for women, probably, as much as anything, as we'll discuss today. And then the other thing that we're going to chat about is, well, we're calling it angry women, because I've had an experience lately that I'm going to share about, which has got us thinking about the way we react to things that we disagree with, the way we react when we're triggered, the need to be right, and how we kind of sort of go into our corners. And we're seeing this. I mean, it's everywhere, you know, because of the prevalence of social media and this kind of polarization of so many issues. And then the idea of wokeism and the idea that, you know, cancel culture, like there's so much to it. And I think for me, it's like the more we can kind of go introspective and question the way we're responding to these things, the better. So we're going to have a great conversation about all that. I'm going to share with you an experience that I've had recently, and we're going to hear from the others. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, I think.
Sounds juicy.
So it does sound juicy, doesn't it? So, Chris, can you please start by explaining to us, like, where you got this sort of sandwich generation term from, and where, you know, why this has become kind of topical for you and why we're going to chat about it today?
Yeah, sure. So the actual term sandwich generation is not new. It's been around for about almost 50 years, I think, coined in the 80s, so maybe slightly less. But I had just heard it on a couple of podcasts and read about it in an ABC article, which we will share in the show notes. And I suppose for me, it just highlighted a stage in our life where we're at, which is, you know, it is just a transition to another season in our life. So that's kind of a good way of kind of premising it. So it's not one of those things that it's sort of, I suppose, shocking and doom and gloom, because everyone's going to go through it. It's kind of like approaching, you know, puberty or menopause or, you know, having babies. Like, it's just another season in our life. But it's always good just to talk about it, because I think sometimes you feel like you're alone when you start going through it. And the sandwich generation is essentially, it's probably become more profound in recent years because younger people are staying at home for longer and people are aging better and living longer as well. I mean, aging better could be disputed depending on your circumstance, but people are definitely living longer. So, you know, women and men, families of our generation are finding themselves dealing with teenage kids, supporting their kids as they become young adults, still living at home, but also caring for elderly parents, and whether that be at home or having to sort plans for aged care facilities. And I know COVID has really made this situation even harder for people. Families were coping with homeschooling, having to work from home as well. So like everything, COVID has probably put a bit more heat on this situation. And it's just the pressures and obligations that come with that. And obviously when it comes to obligation and guilt, like everyone wants to care for their family. That's a no-brainer. But I suppose it's the pressure it puts on families. But as with many things, often this load, physical and mental load, falls to women disproportionately, not surprisingly. And it's not just the emotional load, but it's the fact that, you know, we might have to take time off work, we have to shift our focus from our children, which as teenagers or young adults can be really full on. It's the time of our lives when we're meant to be working at our capacity to earn money. Because I don't know about you guys, but we recently did a financial plan, and the cost that these little buggers are going to cost us once they get towards the end of school and uni, and, you know, like, it's a really expensive time. So then to have to take a chunk of time out of our life to care for parents or just even, you know, anyone in our life that needs that support. So this fantastic podcast that The Tortoise put out recently, which is Brooke and Ben McCallery, and they just talked about it, how to, I suppose, plan for it, which sounds a bit awful, but, you know, you do have to plan for it. You have to look forward at least 10 years and say, well, how are we going to do this? Like, can our parents afford to be in an aged care facility? And if not, who's going to pay for it? And the number one take home for me in this conversation was having the conversation with your siblings and, you know, and or if you're an only child, like, you know, what's your plan? Because it's really hard. Often the responsibility turns to the eldest in the family, not always, but sometimes. And it often falls to women. And sometimes it's really hard to have those conversations and to have a plan about whether you reach out for services to try and share the load. And there's a terrible situation at the moment with aged care facilities on the back of COVID, particularly because the federal government manages them. Like, some of them are just closing their doors and people are having to find alternate housing for their elderly parents who've been in a care facility for 20 years who have dementia. Like, it's just horrific. And it's happening in regional areas more than the cities, which is just awful. So I just wonder if you guys have anything you want to add to this conversation. I've given a lot of info, and yeah, Lee, what about you? Have you, you talked about this briefly in a couple of conversations ago, I remember.
And I think that was actually before we'd had the conversation about the sandwich generation and before I'd listened to that podcast episode with Brooke and Ben McCallery. But I think when I mentioned it a few episodes ago, that was around the time that I was pulling back on our workload a bit with the business, and not because there was anything kind of drastic happening in terms of, you know, my parents or in-laws or anything like that, but just that a few kind of health concerns had cropped up that made me start thinking about it and just, I guess, planted that seed as to how would I cope and manage with this, with my current workload, if anything was to, A, go wrong with parents or in-laws. For me, in my case, it's just my mum, because my dad died a long time ago. But, you know, for my mum, she is on her own. My sister lives in Queensland. My brother's an hour away, so I'm the closest person there. So I know you spoke before, Christy, about it often falls to the eldest. I think sometimes it has to do with that proximity and location as well. If you're the one that's around the corner, then I don't know whether that's just a pressure you place on yourself because you live closest that you think it then becomes your responsibility. But, it just planted that seed to start having a little bit of a think about moving forward. How would I and we siblings and my family and my husband as well, how would we manage this? Because it just felt like at that time, if things were to go wrong, I just didn't have any space to be able to cope with anything if it did go wrong. And then also in conversations with friends, and quite a number of friends who've had kids later, so they've only just started their own families when they've hit their 40s. So for quite a few of my close friends who've started their own families at that stage, they've got parents who are, you know, late 70s or 80s and brand new babies and really tiny toddlers. So sometimes it might be that, you know, like you explained, Christy, you're dealing with kids in those teenage years, and that's full on as well. But then also for those that have got babies and really young kids, that can be really challenging, because I know how much, you know, when I had our kids, how much we relied on that support from the grandparents to be there as well along the way and provide that little bit of extra help. So if your own parents are kind of past that stage and not able to, you know, are that little bit older and are requiring care themselves, then that's just a completely different ball game as well. So I think the sandwich generation can look really different for everyone, depending on what stage of life they're at, when they had their own kids, what age their parents were when they had them. So it is a really interesting topic. And I think one of the most important takeaways that I have from it, again, is that it seems to be a conversation that falls to women mostly. I'm not sure that the men would be sitting around worrying about this quite as much as we do as women. Not to say that they're not going to be in it and helping along the way, of course they are, but I think that just typically, whether it's society or just, I guess it is a huge part of society, that women are still largely considered the carers and the primary carers, whether that's for kids or for parents or grandparents as well. So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting conversation and one worth having, and one that, you know, 10 years ago I wouldn't have even considered. And I'm sure that people in the age group and this stage of life that we're in have been having it for eons, like you say, Christy. This term has been around since the 80s, but it's not something that I was familiar with because I clearly just wasn't in that stage, and I probably just didn't realise that other people, what they were going through. So, which is just, that's life, isn't it? You deal with what's in front of you at the time.
Yeah, and I guess that's what we'll get into talking about. It's one of the many areas where women are still disadvantaged, but that's our next topic. But I think for me, what it brings up is, it's just this idea. To me, it's a bit like talking about death. It's a bit like talking about wills, succession. We just had to have the conversation, you know? And so I'm sitting here thinking, because Tim and I have spoken about, so his sisters both live a lot closer to his mum. So we've both only got our mums left too. And, you know, the older sister is definitely taking on more of the day-to-day and the other sister visits more. But Tim and I have talked about, like, so how can we contribute more? And I think what where we've got to is, like, at least he can just be ringing the girls, offering, like, it's very hard, but, like, just show them that you care and you're very grateful for what they're doing at least and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So it's not just assumed and expected that you're just going to leave it up to them, but we're going to try and support them in that. So because I think the distance thing is really challenging, and so that does make it, like, if you're closer proximity, it unfortunately does make it more obvious. But what you've been making me think about there, though, Chris, is just really, like, even with my sister, just having these conversations. And I think that's such good advice, because you just got to have the conversation and talk to mum about what she wants to happen. My mum's extremely fit and healthy. Like, she's 70 and she still rides two horses every day, and she's, like, so fit. So it's very hard to think about her in that place. But it's really, for me, is that is that planning. It's just like thinking about, let's all have a plan in place for what happens. And what do you want now? Because sometimes too, like, you don't know if they're going to get dementia or what's going to happen, and then they don't get a choice then. So, like, how can you just have steps in place that you've all talked about it? Because I bet this is another phase that just brings up, like, sibling, like, arguments and all sorts of things, because, well, I think mum would have wanted this and you think this. And, you know, so unless if you just talk about it up front, so much more powerful.
And it's funny, it's come up a bit even in our family. Like, my mum had a diagnosis a couple of years ago, and it's life challenging for her. But at the time, she straight away said, I want to go to a nursing home. Like, when my time comes, that's where I want to be. You know, for her to actually say that kind of made us all go, oh, mum, well, we're not quite there yet. But I think for her to actually say that out loud was amazing, because, I mean, obviously some go the other way and say, you know, I'd rather die than go to a nursing home. So that's really hard too. And geography plays a huge part. I've got a really close friend who her family had to put her father in a nursing home a couple of years ago, and her brother lives on the other side of the country, and that was so challenging for them, and particularly during COVID. And I know for me, like, supporting her is really important, because I know that how hard it is. And so just kind of supporting her. She's the one who's organising it all, because she's in the medical sort of field as well. So often it falls to the people who have skills in that area, like they might be a nurse or a, so they kind of go, right, I've got this all sorted. But it's such a mental load for them. And so I think that's one of the things I took from this podcast, was just to kind of acknowledge that it's hard and it's shit, you know, like, it's not like, oh, well, this is just part of life. It's kind of, yes, it is part of life, but it's really hard and it's shitful. And also just to support the people. But I think geography is really hard, and that's where planning is important. And even though you don't want to go, okay, well, mum or dad, you've got to move out because in 10 years' time you might get sick or whatever. But, you know, I know a family at the moment who's going through a sort of an illness challenge with one of their parents, and none of them live locally. So they're kind of taking in turns to put their life on hold for a week at a time to travel to be with that family member, which is amazing. But that's huge. Like, that is, and not knowing how long that's going to be for either. Like, it's just so, so challenging. And I just think that planning is really important. That's the one thing, even though you don't want to be doom and gloom about it, you have to have these conversations, and it's hard, but it's so important.
Yeah. And also, I think going back to the whole, like, don't assume that it's going to be the woman that does it. Like, I think that's really important for men to know, is like, and you know, because yes, there can be that bit of the martyrdom thing, like the women just step into that role, like that does happen, and like they take over, but also, and so they have to be prepared to let the brothers help or whatever it is, but also for the men to step up there and say, all right, like I'm not just going to assume that just because you're a woman, you know, you're going to take on this carer role, because I think that's one of those things that happens so much in society that we see from, you know, from young mothers right through to or new mothers, the assumption is that women are more caring. And actually, interestingly, like I'm probably going to refer to this a few times today in our chat, but I've just been learning in our, I'm doing this neuroscience course with Dr. Sarah McKay. It's called In Her Head. So it's, she's written books on like baby brain and the women's brain from, goes, you know, for, all from in utero right through to aging. And she said like baby brain's not even a thing, for one thing, and also like cognitively, and also this whole idea that women are just more maternal, like biologically is not necessarily entirely true. Like there's men have this huge testosterone drop after a baby's born as well, if they spend time around the child. So they have just as much of a biological reaction, you know, and very much so. It's more a societal thing that's been, you know, sort of brought on. It's social rather than biological. So yeah. And she said there's still so many people just trying to prove there's a cognitive difference. There's a cognitive difference. She just wishes it would move on from trying to prove that there's a cognitive difference and actually just look at all this other stuff that's happening. Yeah. They use the bottom-up, top-down, outside-in approach for the brain. So it's like what's going on for you from your mind down, what's your body doing like in terms of what you're eating and your physical activity and that kind of stuff, and then what outside influences. And I think it's so interesting to look at it from that perspective rather than just assuming that, oh, well, women are just more maternal, they're just more caring, so they should do all these roles. And it's just it's just not true, you know. So we've
and I feel like, too, if we kind of say, oh, something's biological, we just kind of almost write it off and go, oh, well, it's just biological, you know. Whereas when it's not, we go,
oh, you're just biologically wired to do it. Yeah.
But the point is, if it's not, then what is it and why? You know, like it kind of then there's a continue.
I think modelling then, doesn't it? Modelling becomes so important then within family units. So I think of our family, for example, with us only having sons, I would hate to think that they would just assume that it's the woman's job because, far out, when I'm 80, I really hope that my boys stand up and come and chip in and look after me and visit me in the nursing home. Man, that's not going to be fun. If we think it's all up to the women. But the other interesting thing, as you guys were just chatting then too, made me think, I know for me, it wasn't even so much, or it's not even so much a question of what society expects and that I put this pressure on myself that it's that, you know, that's going to be my role and that's a burden. I don't feel that at all. And a big part of the reason for pulling back a little bit on the workload side of things is because if and when that time comes, I would consider it an absolute privilege to be the person who would get to play that role, particularly if it was with my mum. I mean, I've grown up watching her as a lifelong nurse that she was as well. She was just such and is still such a carer of everyone around her and having that medical background as well. I know when her parents, you know, kind of went through this later stage of their lives, like, Mum was just extraordinary in her care for them, and she was working full-time nursing through all that period as well. But I just remember it's just seared into my kind of psyche so strongly how amazing she was in that role with her parents and then with my dad when he was ill. And I just think there's nothing about it that feels burdensome for me. It is just that I hope one day I can be in a position to, if she needs that kind of care, that I can be there because she bloody deserves it. You know,
and that is such a lovely way to think of it too, Lee. So like it's profound. All very well, it's all very easy to think of, oh God, the burden of it all. But actually, it's how we view it, and is it a privilege? But I guess that also, to me though, that brings up the idea of choice too, doesn't it? Like, it's nice to be able to have the choice in some ways. And sometimes you don't, and sometimes you do. But like, I think where you can probably run into trouble is where it just all gets assumed and it all gets put on you. And you're actually trying to, you know, like it's not coming from that place of this is a privilege for me to do this. So there's a lot going on there. It's like you having the ability to see that from within yourself. But then also if you're feeling the outside pressure of people just expecting you to do it. So, but I think you raise a really beautiful point.
Yeah, I agree, Leigh. It's nice to frame it like that. But in this conversation, it was really, you know, Brooke, particularly in this chat, said, you know, like it's another season in our lives where it gives us, unfortunately, the opportunity to put ourselves last again as well. So that's where it's really important to be kind and look after ourselves and ask for help, because women are not great at asking for help, which we've talked about numerous times in this on this podcast in whatever capacity. So then I feel like, Lee, when you talk about that, I suppose it's that legacy that you want to live by and leave. And it reminded me of a saying I think I brought up on a couple of conversations ago by David Parkin, who was an AFL coach, and he just said it's later than you think it is. So, you know, do the things and make the plans, because it's later in your life than you think it is, or it's later in your parents' life than you think it is. Even when I look around now and look at the age of our kids, and I just think, shit, I still think I'm 21, and, you know,
totally.
That's actually not true. So I think without kind of, you know, being too over the top about it, just thinking about it, having a conversation, and, mm-hmm. you know, even just making those little kind of promises to yourself that if I can get to here and do this by then I might have the ability mm-hmm. to leave that legacy.
And it raises a question too around how we actually, in this society here in Australia, how we actually treat and kind of address the issue of aging, totally. Our aging community, whether, you know, your immediate family or just aging in general. And it sticks in my mind so vividly when we had a trip to Thailand years and years ago, and I was out riding a bike with a beautiful Thai man. He was only really young, actually. He was only 20, I think. And we were just having this conversation out on these bikes, and he was asking questions about Australia. And, you know, I don't even know how it came up, but I remember us having this conversation around parents, and him asking, he knew we had children, but do you live with your parents as well? And me explaining kind of how that worked over here, and him just being absolutely horrified. He had no idea about aged care facilities and that kind of thing. He looked at me with wide eyes of horror that we would put our parents into homes. Mm. Because, of course, in those sorts of countries, it's such a communal setting, isn't it, where generations of families are all, if not in the same homes, they're in those same little communes, and they're all so supportive of each other. And I remember him saying, but your parents have given you everything. You know, without them you wouldn't be here and you wouldn't have what you have, and how could you then just put them into a home? And it's stuck with me always since I've come home, to just think that sometimes we probably need to have a little bit more of a think about how we do treat our aging community.
And I think the answer to that question is poorly, Lee. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, going back to COVID, like, that just brought it home big time. Like, it was just, and I think our lifestyle, though, almost dictates that scenario, like our fast-paced, you know, let's all rise to the top, you know.
More,
like,
more.
Yeah, more. That has what created, because no one has time or space or room or capacity to look after anyone else other than themselves. Like, that's the reality. But and I feel like that's a conversation for a whole other day.
Well, Chris, that actually leads me into discussing the reason why I got so triggered this week, because I think one of the things is that women are now working more. We're not just that, you know, we're not just, but we're not at home like we used to be a generation before as much. So we don't have the capacity, because we want to be getting on with our lives still as well, at this same point where we're having to be forced to look after aging parents. And, you know, as we've discussed, it's often the women that it falls to, which is another area that I see as a gender disparity, which is leads me into where I got triggered this week. And so for me, this conversation is not so much about feminism, and because, you know, obviously we all agree that there's still inequalities and all that kind of stuff. But what I got curious about and what I noticed this week was my reaction to something that triggered me, and like how I responded and how we fall into these kind of like, I need to be right camps. And I guess, so my sister posted something on Facebook that I like fundamentally disagreed with, you know, and it really triggered me so much. And in the moment, I did not behave as my best self, like I would like to behave, which would be to take a pause, take a nice deep breath, and, you know, just think about it and absorb it and be reflective. Like, that didn't happen. And I didn't respond on the Facebook post. I just snapped off.
Well done. Kudos there.
So at least that's one thing. That is one thing. I guess I did have enough pause to not do it on a public forum. But I did send a text, and it did spiral quite quickly into, well, you know, you did this and you did that. I was like, well, this is really, really interesting. So, of course, I spoke to you guys about it. I spoke to Meg about it. And then after I didn't behave as my best self, I then started to get curious about, okay, well, it's really interesting the way we still be so reactive to things that we don't agree with. And like, you know, and I was thinking about, so like, I'm trying to see it from her point of view, but I honestly just can't on this one. Like, feminism to me and, like, needing to still have equality and, like, this issue is, like, I honestly just cannot see how anyone can't see that we still have a lot of inequalities. And, you know, the aging, looking after aging parents is just one of it. There's so many layers in society where women are still disadvantaged and we do have inequality. And so I find it really hard to see from the other point of view. And you know, Leone, you brought up the idea of, like, there's this just need to be right still. So, and I think we're living in this world where, like, there is just this, you know, polarization of so many issues. So where's the line, though, between, and this is the other thing that came up from this week, was this idea of, so someone wanted to go and, you know, someone had a work colleague who is transgender and they were worried about taking them somewhere because they might dress as a woman, and it was to go and see a group of farmers, and they'd be like, oh God, you know, so it would be seen as not, like, they were worried about how that would be perceived from the group of farmers or whatever. Like, so a lot of assumptions being made about everybody's points of view. But the older man was, like, really kind of threatened by this idea of transgender. And this got me thinking again about this, like, why do we take these things so personally? Why do we feel like there's, like, all of this stuff is, you know, why can't we have this whole idea of cancel culture and this wokeisms? Like, what's going on that we've lost this? Have we lost the ability to have nuanced conversations? Or also, is some of it just the fact that, like, you know, being homophobic, racist and sexist, you're just an asshole. Like, that's not having an opinion. That's just being mean. Like, I'm sorry, but you don't get to have an opinion on someone's race, sex or gender or whatever, you know. Like, I think that for me that does cross a line. Like, I think you could probably have an opinion on whether say a transgender person should be able to use women's toilets at this point perhaps. But whether they choose to be transgender or not is really none of your business, and it's not something you can have an opinion on. So, like, is that the line? I mean, I think we did talk about this in one other podcast, didn't we? We talked about this idea of, like, you know, what's the line between freedom of speech and...
Oh, totally.
Yeah, so what do you think about this need to be right, though? Like, and how do we... Oh, it's tricky, isn't it?
It's so triggering. And I know when we were having the conversation during the week, I wish we could have recorded all the messages going back and forward and whatever, because it was... we're all like, oh, my God, this is so hard. You know, it happens to all of us as well. And I think that... We did talk before we started recording about that sort of wanting to be right and the polarizing views. And I think I used to get really upset when I used to hear people I know and love say things or, you know, have views about things. And I just want to try and talk them out of it. You know, like, I would have arguments with people and get upset and go, I don't want to, you know, be with that person because they think that or whatever. And I've definitely softened on that because, you know, you can't change people, but it hasn't stopped me from putting out there what I want to say about things and how I feel. And I mean, we can shit can social media because it has made it like the polarizing views. It has made it like an echo chamber for some people. And I feel like people use it as a combating space where they just want to have a blue with someone about something, you know, online, and that's just not helpful for anyone. But I also feel like for me, social media, I use it to put my views forward, you know, in a really sometimes just a subtle way, just by sharing something someone else might have said, whether it be social justice or racism or The Voice is a good example that's been popping up a lot, The Voice to Parliament, you know, just putting it out there, and then like people know that's how I feel. So I don't feel like I need to question other people on it when they don't agree. So that's where, which doesn't really kind of answer your question, Katrina, but that's where I sit on it.
And I guess what I was thinking about there was what came up for me, though, like when I saw this post, I felt, so, and this is what I think it goes to this deeper, like how it makes you feel. So I felt sort of embarrassment, probably a bit of shame, a bit of anger. I was definitely angry. So it's kind of like, and I know that I'd love to share and get everyone to listen to, like, Elise Lonan interviewed Harriet Lerner. She wrote the book The Dance of Anger, and it's such a fascinating book all about how we go into these dances, especially in intimate relationships or with family or like these lifelong relationships where, you know, someone throws the barb and then you get triggered and you respond this way and then you go into this always this dance that you know, and you can see this in a sort of husband-wife relationship. So just constantly an argument, the cycle's the same every day. You know, it's just this back and forth. And so this is, but if you look at this deeper layer, there is a deeper layer of a need or a human desire or a feeling that's actually going on. So it would be like a fear of abandonment. It might be a fear of not being loved. It might be, so there's all these deeper layers to how we're reacting and responding. And I think that's where I went to with this discussion with my sister this week, was sort of turned it inwards and was like, okay, so why am I responding like this? But yeah. I was still so frustrated myself that I couldn't in the moment not respond the way I always do, you know. It's like, damn it, learning, always learning.
did you get any answers after that, sort of after the actual incident itself, and then you did have that time for self-reflection and to look inward as to why you were so deeply triggered and perhaps why you reacted that way? Were you able to come up with any kind of answers?
Where I got to was the embarrassment. Yeah. And I think I'm still struggling with what's the deeper thing for me and the need, like, because I'm so triggered by that conversation. Like, I just feel so deeply passionate about women's, you know, and I don't, I'm not exactly sure where that comes from, like why it's so deep, whether it's just, I've always had that. It's a bit like, how I felt about, I guess it's about people's well-being and like just, you know, but I'm not, I can't quite get to the bottom of, I think it is, to be honest, it probably is just that dance. Like, it's the dance that Tim said, but this is what always happens with you two. She throws the barb and then you react and then you go into this dance. So I think possibly it is just that too a bit, but this issue, see, we had an argument about it at summertime, but I could sort of move on from there. I think it was the thing that was put in the public space too, that I felt shame and embarrassment. Mm. So it was sort of like, felt like people might think that I was attached to that sort of view as well, perhaps. So, yeah, I don't know, Lee. It's a tricky one. I'm trying to
It is one of those things too, I think it's hard to do, but like, I think for me in that situation, like, you almost have to care a little bit less about that, like that actual outcome. And I think we were talking about this recently, caring less. Oh, we were talking about education. That's a conversation for another day.
Yes, that's a whole other one.
You know, like not caring about, you know, the outcome or, and I might have been talking about it even when I was doing this yoga. Like when I first started doing it, I was so worried about, oh my God, what if I stuff it up? Like, you know, what if I'm not good at it or whatever? But, and it's different, I know, Katrina, to your situation, but just caring less about what people think. And I know that for me, as I've got older, I just care less. Like this friend of mine, we're the same age, and recently we're at the market in Victoria Market in Melbourne, and she bought these two little badges and it says, excuse my language here, like less fucks or no fucks to give or no fucks left or something like that. Basically, you get to an age where you just care less, not about the issue, but you care less about, I suppose, what other people might think or say or do. Like that's certainly how I feel. And it's funny because I feel like I've gone so far the other way. Like, just recently one of our daughters was complaining about the inequality between boys and girls at her school. Like she was really fired up about it and really fired up and kind of attacking me. And I'm like, oh my God, okay, well, what are you going to do about it? You know, like if you've got an issue, do something about it. And we had a big argument about it. And then I was talking to Troy and he looked at me going, I wonder where she gets that from, you know? And I'm like, oh, what do you mean?
I love it.
And then I just said to her later, I'm so sorry for arguing with you, because I thought, oh my God, what if she thinks I don't like agree with her or support her? Because I absolutely do, but I'm an action person. I'm like, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? Who are we going to write to? And then I said to her, I have to realize as a mum too, and someone who's probably softened a bit in her raging feminism, that I need to just listen. I need to just listen to what she has to say a bit more rather than try and fix it all and come up with solutions. So it's just a really tricky space.
And it's such a skill too, isn't it? It's such an art form, being able to have an argument respectfully, being able to hold space for somebody else and for an opinion that is really different to your own and that really triggers you. And I think it is just heightened so much when it's with a family member or just somebody really close to you that makes it doubly hard because there's so much more emotion involved. When it is, somebody who's really close to you and who you love and respect, and then sometimes when I think opinions differ, it can be quite shocking to you, can't it? So yes, I think, like, totally. As you described, Katrina, that those feelings of embarrassment or anger or even maybe just disappointment that you're not on the same page with everything. And I think you mentioned something as well about it can depend on the issue too, and you spoke of things that pretty much should be off the table, whether it's race and sex and gender and those kinds of issues. We feel like, well, they're just, I agree with you. I feel like some of those issues, they just shouldn't even be a conversation. So when you find yourself in a disagreement with someone about those things, oh, they're the ones that just get the blood boiling, don't they? Whereas there are other issues, and I suppose vaccination was another one during all that COVID time where that was an issue that people, a lot of people just thought there shouldn't be two sides on this, but of course there is. That was a really hard time for people. I found that really challenging throughout that time. But also I think the other thing you mentioned was some people who have that, the way they explain their behavior, if they have an opinion that, you know, maybe not a popular one and so forth. And when they say that, well, that's just who I am kind of thing. I actually had a conversation with a friend about this yesterday who works in a health system and had an issue with a male colleague who made some really derogatory comments about another woman in that workplace. And she called him on it and really, really let him know. And he just spun around and said, well, that's who I am. Oh. Deal with it. Kind of thing. And it was just
excellent.
That's that reminder to me of no, that is never an excuse. It's never an excuse. It's such a cop out to say just that's my who opinion. I am.
Fuck off. Sorry, speak my language again.
But also no opinion is absolute because it just doesn't work that way. Your right to have an opinion isn't absolute because there are so many other people in and around you that you have to consider. You have to think you can have that opinion, but you have to be respectful and considerate of other people around you. I think that's the thing I find in some personalities one of the most challenging to deal with is the ones who just say, deal with it, that's who I am and I'm never going to change. And I just find that so... It's a real affront to me because I just think, why can't you just be a little bit more open? I understand that you have a right to your opinion, of course, but not when it's to the detriment or the safety of other people around you. Like you have to consider other people. That's how we function. That's how humanity and society works.
Exactly. And I feel this is a really good time to then kind of ponder the question about the energy and emotion that is used and perhaps wasted on trying to challenge and change people. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, well, so it's interesting because what was coming up for me there, I was thinking about, like, so on issues of, like, vaccination, I could respect a different point of view. Like when it came to the water stuff and I was involved with the water stuff in our community, I really could see and understand and have empathy for where people were coming from those different point of views. But when it comes to things like feminism and like and these other issues, I cannot see. And so it does, like, energy wise, like, my heart's even racing now talking about it. Like,
so my point is too, from a self-preservation point of view, where's the line for you where you go, you know what, I cannot actually operate in this space any longer, I have to just let it go in this instance?
Yes, so the line for me on this instance was that, so Sarah got a bit low with the conversation with a couple of things she said, and I was like, all right, that's it, I'm done. And then she was like, I think you should call me and we'll have a conversation about it. And I was like, and she says, in a few years you'll agree with me. And I was like,
What?
No. Yes, in a few years you'll probably agree with me. And I was like, okay, well, hell will freeze over before I agree with you on this.
Over my dead body.
Surely you know that. But also, like, that was the point for me. I was like, I have zero desire to have a conversation with you about this. Like, so, but is that me not being willing and open enough to have a conversation, or is that me protecting my energy and my boundaries? Like, how do you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've got to choose your battles, Katrina. Yes. That's how I feel about it, because I think there's so many other areas you could put your beautiful, supportive, feminine in energy into, you know, like so many others, because you actually can't challenge and change some people, you know, like that dickhead at the workplace. Like, you're never going to probably change how he feels. Yes, you can kind of put some boundaries in place and say you can't say that here or whatever, but you're never going to change him. And I don't want to waste my energy trying to change him or her or
no.
But how do you make that, like, so, because some people would say, oh, well, you're not prepared to have the conversation then. You just don't want to talk about it. Where's
that's okay.
That?
Yeah. That's okay.
I think too, Katrina, as you're speaking there, if you've had that conversation more than once and it's ended up in the same kind of way and you're both probably becoming even more entrenched in your views on the issue, then maybe that's one to just say, do you know what, this one's, we've just got to agree to disagree. And leave this one on the side, because I think some issues are just too difficult for some of us to work through with particularly.
Yes, and you've got to value, like, yes, your energy, your relationship. And sometimes you just go say, okay, well, our relationship and our energy and all that is more important than this.
We're
never going to see eye to eye on this. There's no point us trying to convince each other. That's just a hiding to nothing. So let's just, agree to disagree.
I think so.
Gosh, that is a tricky one, though, that you raise, Chris, I reckon, is like that, protecting your energy and your boundaries versus being willing to engage and see another point of view and, like, where do you bring that in for you? So that, again, takes self-reflection, self-awareness, self-knowledge, so much.
And choosing the higher road. Like, I had this conversation with our kids all the time about choosing the higher road and what that actually is and how does it look. And sometimes it can look like abandoning something, because it's the easy way out. But sometimes it's like, in conversation, like, say, with gossiping, I just find just silence is, really powerful and hard to do. And, yes, maybe I should kind of challenge someone on that, but I'm just not going to say anything, and just walk away or not engage in it, which can be a cop out and it is self-preservation, but
you've still respected and honored your own boundaries in that and values in that moment, haven't you? You may not have changed
the problem
them.
Yeah, and then I think of it on we should move on to what we're loving, but I was just thinking, like, that brings me to thinking about from a spiritual level too, and like, when in meditation and in practicing consciousness, and if you think about the Buddha and the Dalai Lama, and it's all about, like, just don't engage in any of that stuff, like, just don't you do not need to really worry about any of it. So it's like,
just be witness to it.
Exactly. I don't know what you need this week more than anything, Katrina, is a little bit more yoga and a little bit of loving kindness meditation in your life this week.
Yes.
Sending lots your way. Works every bloody time, guaranteed.
Love it. Love it. You're so right.
So let's move on from these two interesting conversations, and we will put all the links in the show notes to all the bits and pieces we've mentioned. But we might move on to what we're loving. And who wants to kick off for this conversation?
Well, I can jump in. I actually had something I was going to share, but during the course of this conversation, I've changed. And I'm going to share what I'm loving is, and you know me, I don't watch a lot of TV, but over this this week, excuse my dog barking in the background, we have been tuning into, as a family, Parental Guidance, which I think, I don't know, it's on Channel 9 or something, with Dr. Justin Coulson, who is a really great parenting expert who I've followed along the way. But some really close friends of ours are actually on the show this season.
Oh, cool.
So they're the road schooling family. So they're they've got three kids similar age to ours, and one of their sons is – but one of my child's best mates. So it's been awesome tuning in and watching it. But I was speaking to her yesterday and we just had a really interesting conversation. I was just telling her how much I love it. But what I'm loving is because they're examining 12 different families and 12 very different parenting styles. And you can imagine, that, and they all get to critique each other on their parenting styles, and their kids are put through all these challenges, and then the parents all sort of come together and to talk about what... How very brave to put yourselves out there like that.
Awesome.
But we're just loving it so much because, I mean, there are so many aspects of all these different parenting styles that you agree with or that you disagree with. But so far they've been really respectful of each other and their different styles. And it's just been amazing to, as a parent yourself, and often you are second guessing or you kind of, you don't always know what you're doing at different stages. But taking different things from each different parenting style and family style and their sets of values and so forth, and kind of just adding it to the toolkit, your own little toolkit, and also it helps you to reflect on the way that you parent in different situations and even just conversations with your kids. They've been putting them into challenging situations around cyber safety, bullying, and pretty much leaving these kids out there and putting them in a real life situation and then seeing how they respond in that moment. So it's been so cool watching it with the kids as well and then having the conversations with them around it as well. What would you do in that moment if you saw bullying like that? Would you just walk away? Would you be a bystander? Would you be brave enough to step up and say something in that moment? So I don't know if you girls have watched it at all, but I would highly recommend it. You get a lot out of it. And Dr. Coulson steps in along the way as well and pretty much, guiding them too in different situations on kind of the best advice that he can give on how to approach it. But just loved it. And, again, it's just challenging you to see things in a different way and consider how you do things yourself. So that's what I've been loving this week. What about you, Chris?
Well, I've been revisiting a beautiful weekly newsletter, which I think you girls might get too. I'm not revisiting. I always read it, but sometimes I just skim over it. And it's Beautiful Sophie Hansen, the local Is Lovely newsletter, which pops into your inbox on a Sunday.
Love it. So good.
And she's got those beautiful series of books. First one, I think, is Basket at the Door, and she's got a couple of others. And it's just five things to be cheerful about on a Monday. And is that right? I think it comes in on a Sunday,
yes,
or a Monday.
Anyway,
and I just love it. I've been loving the recipes in it. I think I've cooked something from it the last couple of weeks. And she's just, yeah, lots of things like podcasts and photography, and she's just got, and playlists. I've actually been pinching some of her music off her playlists as well. She's just got a really great vibe about her, and
beautiful energy.
It really frames my week really well. It's kind of like, oh yes, there are always things to be cheerful about. So I'm loving that, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's awesome.
Cool. I love Sophie. Katrina. I interviewed her from the very first episode.
I thought
of the
you did.
Podcast.
Yeah,
yes. And she's like Tim went to uni or school with her husband, and like she's just the best. She's just done, and I love her recipe books too. I cook from them all the time. My recommendation, or what I'm loving this week, my recommendation, I'm listening to Mamma Mia out loud all the time. So I'm like, should we do best and worst of the week? Like, I feel like I'm like on their podcast right now. Anyway, my recommendation, is Elise Lonan, I think I said the last name right, Elise Lonan's new book, On Our Best Behaviour. So Elise was the podcast editor and I think like basically overall editor for Goop for years. So I worked with Gwyneth Paltrow for years, and she's left there. She never ever says anything bad about Gwyneth. Like, she's very respectful, but you get the feeling like she was under a lot of pressure there and like it was very intense and all that. Anyway, she's written this wonderful, wonderful book. Anyone who doesn't think that there's a gender gap anymore, or that we should all just stop complaining about needing more equality, should go and read this book. It's brilliant. So it gives the whole history of the patriarchy, and then it's all about how it sort of talks about the seven deadly sins and how women have really adopted these seven deadly sins and we've taken them on board. And like, you know, the first one she goes through is sloth, and how like the worst sin to commit is to be lazy, like sit on the couch and read a book or watch some TV. Gosh, that's terrible. You know, anyway, but she goes into it in a lot of, it's just beautiful. She's a beautiful writer and it's so well written, and it just speaks to your soul as a woman. You're like, oh my God, it's hard relate. So highly recommend that one. It's been awesome. Mm. And she's just wonderful. Go and follow her if you don't know. And she's just a beautiful person. I love her so much. So it's great.
What was her last name again?
Lonan. You asked me to say it again, Chris, and I couldn't say it right the first time. I think
No. I'll definitely Google it. So, and it's called On Your Best Behaviour. Is that right?
A book? Yeah, On Our Best Behaviour. As in women.
Sounds awesome.
Oh, it does. Yeah, it sounds really enlightening.
You guys will love it. Yeah.
Actually, I've just started a whole bunch of books, really cool stuff, but I'll save those for next time, because it's nice to kind of, you know, spread the love, spread the good stuff across
spread
the episode. So I think we're almost done, or we are done, I think, ladies, for episode
that's a wrap.
And thanks for chatting, and thanks for being open and vulnerable, Katrina, in all this conversation that, you know, you've been sharing. And I know that people will take on board, you know, what we've all shared, and kind of and please feel free to share with us too your experiences and thoughts on any of these topics, because they are challenging and hard, but the more we talk about them, hopefully the better it is for everyone. So thank you, ladies, for spreading
Absolutely.
The good stuff.
Thanks,
we'll probably have a little bit more of a break after this episode too. I'm just thinking this one will come out just before the school holidays, and then we may add an extra week of break onto there, so it might not be a fortnight between this one and the next episode, but we'll let you know on the socials when it's coming out.
Beautiful. Sounds great. Thanks, ladies.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for the
help. Thanks, girls. Great to chat.
Thank you.
See you later.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Spreading the Good Stuff. It is so lovely to have your company here. If you enjoyed the show, we would absolutely love it if you hit the little arrow at the top of the podcast iTunes page there, or like it on Spotify, and also give us a rating. 5 would be fabulous. If it's not a 5 for you, then maybe just don't bother. That's okay. But if it is, we would love for you to help us spread the good stuff more by supporting us, and also tell your friends about it. We all know that word of mouth is the best way to learn about new things. Maybe share it on your socials, do a little screenshot of the podcast tile, whatever works for you, but we would just absolutely love it if you would help us spread the good stuff. Thanks, guys.